everybody. Happy Monday night. Today is June 26, 2023. This is Across the Pitch. I am Mike Brera. I'm joined by my two buddies, my two pals, Jose and Dave. Jose, I'll shoot to you first. How are you doing tonight?
I must admit, that's a rare instance where I go before Dave, so I welcome it. I appreciate it. I'm doing well. Recharged. You know, you and I were both at the stadium this past weekend, and thank you to everybody who said hello. It was so nice to meet everybody who... Thank you, Kyle. It was great to meet you, Kyle, Jillian, other folks like Val and Mike Borton as well. Got to meet a lot of people that we've often interacted with and a lot of people that listen to our show. So it's been nice to recharge, to reset, and you know, after what felt like a comfortable win, it's welcome for sure.
Sounds good. Dave, how about you? How are you doing tonight?
I mean, you know, it was always good to come in, you know, do the show after a good union win, sort of always lift the mood. And obviously, Jim Curtin mentioned last week how he was hoping for at least 4 points. He got those 4 points, and it's, you know, it's good to see perhaps making like a little dent in that Cincinnati lead at the top. I know the Union is still, I believe, a fourth in the Eastern Conference, but I mean, slowly but surely getting there, 9 points now. Better goal difference than Cincinnati. Just need to win that reverse fixture to, you know, perhaps level up the head-to-head. But, I mean, things are looking good. And, you know, another big game this weekend in Atlanta. So, another tough test, having, you know, got a point against Orlando, which I'm sure we'll discuss. But, yeah, I mean, I'm feeling positive about the evening.
Yeah, you know, also, it was a busy week in general for us. So, we recorded last Monday night. And then Wednesday, we had the game, the Orlando match, which we'll talk about briefly, considering the amazing goal that we got to see at the end of that match. And then, Jose, you and I were lucky enough to be on Kyle and Jillian's show, The One Team We Agree On. So if you haven't checked that out yet, go on their YouTube channel and their other platforms and make sure you watch that. It was a really, really good conversation, very laid back, great time. It was great to see those two again at the tailgate. Then, obviously, we had the game Saturday. So it's been a really busy union week for us. And now here we are to discuss these last two matches and look ahead what is going to be a very tough road trip. But I think, Dave, one of you two had mentioned on the Twitter group chat about how Cincinnati also has a tough road ahead as well. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But first, let's talk about the Orlando match real fast. It was a 2-2 draw. But the most important thing we want to talk about is the Jose Martinez goal. So, Dave, I know you watched this later than all of us. So what was your reaction when you saw that?
Really caught me by surprise, to be honest. I just wouldn't expect it. I think probably everyone's the same. It was sort of like, you know, you're watching the game and, you know, cross comes out and thinking, okay, what's going to happen here? Just sort of in those sort of situations, you know, Jose usually quite likes to compose himself and take a touch before shooting. And you just saw him hit it first time as hard as he could and sort of like a half volley as the ball bounced up for him. And I just thought, and I just saw the ball flew and I was like, oh, holy shit, like what a finish. Like, I couldn't believe he'd done it. And obviously, like, to come back from 2-0 down, I think that was quite similar. I don't want to say, what was the game they came down from, back from two goals down in early in the year?
It's Minnesota, right?
Montreal.
Oh, Montreal, yeah. No.
That was a Montreal game, I think I remember. I can't remember, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And it didn't really feel like that sort of game where, you know, the Union were terrible for an hour and then suddenly kicked into gear. I thought the Union, for the most part, were probably could have felt a bit aggrieved that they were 2-0 down. And so to come back in the way they did, obviously felt good and very much deserved. I think it felt a bit like the Atlanta game a couple of years ago when Brezner scored the absolute thunderbolt at the last second. Like, it just felt like one of those games where they didn't deserve to be down by two goals and they rightfully pulled it back. Obviously, Jack McGinn with a fortunate goal. But that Martinez goal was just incredible, and I'm sure we all see it on repeat in loops. I think it was like his 107th shot on goal in Zemlya's career. I think Dan Higginbottom, one of the commentators, mentioned on Saturday's game. So I think well worth it. Well worth the wait having to, you know, watch the game and see the goal.
Absolutely. And Valerie joins us. We got to meet Valerie, Jose, you and I. So Valerie, thanks for hanging with us tonight. And again, me and you on Saturday. But so Jose, I mean, I know you and I talked a brief, you know, about this already in person, but what were your thoughts on the Martinez goal?
The Martinez goal was awesome, man, right? To see this thing floating about all over the place, Men in Blazers, some other accounts as well, FOS Sports, even Pat McAfee, you know, and I know he enjoys soccer, but obviously American football is his main thing. Retweeting it and just being, you know, very much in a state of holy shit, how did that go in, you know? I think we all were in that same headspace as well. So it was a fun goal to watch. It was not a great game to watch per se. It was a tough battle for sure. And, you know, Jim in the press conference after the match had mentioned, you know, this is what happens when you work hard. This is what happens when you grind out these games away from home. You get ties. And ultimately, you know, you got to remember the pieces that were missing, right? Andre Blake missing. Daniel Gastag technically could have been part of the squad, but no sense in doing so, considering I think like 8 or 9 hours before match time, he had just finished playing for Hungary or something crazy like that. So no reason to rush him back is obviously just no sense. And you have a Jose Martinez who typically doesn't do well after an international break. I don't know if it's the system coming off of Venezuela and then coming to the Union, if something, you know, is just not clicking right in his head. But ultimately, you know, we keep on stressing this, win at home, tie away, and sneak away with a few wins away from home, and that's how you get it done. And that's exactly what they did, and you couldn't really ask for much more, especially with what we got this past Saturday in terms of an overall another weird performance, but we can touch on that later.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, when we joined the show on Thursday for the one team we agree on, Kyle and Jillian said, what were your thoughts on it? I said, well, listen, you know, I'm happy with the draw. Maybe I wasn't so happy about the fact of how we got to the draw. I don't want to be down 2-0 on the road in the hot weather and those conditions, but I'm happy with the result. The Jose Martinez goal I've seen now probably 50 times. I'm probably going to watch it again tonight just for the hell of it. I know I had made a list which got a lot of back and forth on Twitter about the top 10 goals in Union history.
A subjective question and getting such a discourse, right?
Yeah, a little bit. But listen, I mean, the way I view goals, you can view goals contextually where, you know, well, what moment was it in? Was it the El Seno game? Was it the playoff games? Or you can just say the quality. I think the quality for me was one of the best goals I've ever seen in person. Well, not in person, but on, you know, for the Union.
Live.
But again, it was a good 2-2 draw, and I'll take that any day of the week. But we did segue into the Saturday's match, which I know we want to talk about more because Jim Curtin wasn't very pleased with the 4-1 victory. But again, we did win 4-1. We had goals from the obvious people, Jacob Glesnes. We had an own goal. We had Carranza, of course, putting one a sitter in the back of the net. And then we had Dave Miller's boy, the $3 million man, Leon Flock, came up to the plate. So for those who don't know, Leon is currently getting looked at from a team in Bundesliga for $3 million, apparently. Might be now four, if not more. Who knows?
Werder Bremen.
Cool. Yes, thank you for reminding me. Dave, I'll let you take the stand here. Leon Flock, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's obviously great to see him, you know, score a good goal. I mean, not just a goal, but a very, very good goal. I think very good finish from, you know, the position where it was inside the box, to strike it first time, to find the sort of near bottom corner of the side of the goal that was out, as opposed to striking it across. But yeah, I think it was a great goal. Good to see. And I think it's well deserved after the form he has shown over the last month and a half, where he, you know, he stepped in, not just in the back five, playing in the midfield two, but also, you know, dropping into the six when called upon when Jose's been out injured. And yeah, I think it's very much well deserved. And I think, again, over the last couple of games, 2-3 weeks, he's perhaps been a bit more involved on the attacking side of the game as well, putting some good crosses. And yeah, I'm delighted to see him, you know, getting the score sheet, and hopefully, you know, they'll make it continue. Suddenly becomes a goal scorer midfielder like Caddy Bedoy did at one point last season.
Jose, what are your thoughts?
Your point's right. Jim was not happy about that win, despite winning 4-1 and neutralizing two gigantic stars in MLS, and that of Rodolfo Pizarro and Josef Martinez, which have been, specifically Josef, a thorn on the side of the Philadelphia Union over the many years, may have been with Atlanta, and most recently with Inter Miami. It has just been he has been just a nightmare for Jim. But ultimately, going into this match, we all knew that this was going to be a very interesting game in terms of game planning, right? Jim very open to all of us in the press room about, listen, we had no idea what they were going to put in terms of injuries. We didn't know what was going to happen with the roster. We still don't know what's going to happen with the roster in terms of a shakeup. Obviously, we have the Busquets confirmation, which means that one comes in and maybe two go out in terms of salary and everything that's needed to accommodate him. But all in all, I was pleased. I felt like I was more pleased than Jim, and maybe you were too, Mike, as well. But just really interesting to see Leon come to really feel himself in a way, right? Like, he is after one or two matches where we were really critical of him in terms of his spacing, not realizing that, okay, I don't have the sideline to cover me anymore. I need to be more aware of my surroundings and, you know, handing bodies over to a center back or trailing somebody. He played a spectacular game in terms of spacing. And you can watch any replay. And yes, statistically, they did outpass us 2-1. But ultimately what matters is that the bodies were in the right location to make sure that they can pass it all they want, but not really get anywhere. But just an intriguing win. I hope that this is the kickstart. I think this is when the nice stretch of games for us last year happened in terms of, you know, high scoring games and decent to good performances start piling up. And funny that it coincides with maybe a few matches away after, you know, the sky was falling in terms of getting out of two other competitions that were sort of taking up some mind share from us. So, Mike, I'd love to hear from you. Obviously, you and I were in the press box. You were at the other end of the press room. So I'd love to hear from you since we didn't really get a chance to maybe interact with one another during the match.
Yeah, it was weird though. So anytime people are in the press box together in terms of like the networks or whatever outlet they're coming from, they usually sit together, but it was a very crowded box that time. It was busy across the board, so we were
because Messi was there.
That's true. Yeah, but how could I forget that? So we had you were on the one side entirely, and then I was over on the left behind. I was in the worst spot in the box too, which was the bad thing because the pole just hits you right on the goal.
I don't know, Mike. I had a big old metal beam myself, as well as a spider, sort of like webbing a net.
Oh, the spider's always there. He's a season ticket holder. So the Leon Flock goal, I know Jim mentions after in the press conference how the hard work that Leon does doesn't always show up on the stat sheet. I think we see it as fans because we watch every single match, but it's easy to kind of gloss over his performance because what did he do in the stat sheet? But he finally got it, and it was a good strike too from just outside the box. It was a clean, really good strike. It did not have that awkwardness to his first goal against Cincinnati where it just looked really uncomfortable when he struck the ball. So it definitely was much more of a pure strike there. But in terms of what you mentioned, Jose, the passing that Miami was doing, one of the things that Jim kind of harped on in the press conference was the fact that he didn't like the fact that the Union were chasing all night. Yep. It seemed a lot of running to be done in those heat in the hot conditions. And I think around 20 minutes ago in the match, it had like 70% possession. And yeah. I know the Union get outpossessed a lot anyway. I get that, but 70% is usually more than they give up. But you're right. I mean, they would go to the left and they switch it back over to the right and then go left. And then it was just constantly all of that back and forth. And despite that movement, Bendik really wasn't tested all night. He had one close chance right after our second goal. I know he got the deflection off Glesnes, which happens. I get that.
Such a bummer. You know, that totally felt like it would have been the only time he would have had a clean sheet all season.
No, I mean, they really didn't get any sort of – and there's Valley comment in there with the web. They didn't really get a good look at Bendik, which was nice. I kind of felt bad that he didn't get that clean sheet because, he deserves a break every now and then. As a fan collective group here, we kind of shit on him a bit because he's not Andre Blake, which is not his fault. It's just not.
It's a tough pair of shoes to fill. And yeah. You know, I just wanted to expand a second on Leon, right, where you had mentioned about the rumblings, right, about his potential transfer out of the Philadelphia Union or at least Werder Bremen paying attention to him. And he was asked point blank in the press room, or I should say in the post press room in the players area where the kind staff at Subaru Park, the Union staff that the work media sort of bring players out for us to interview, ask questions and whatnot. Leon was asked point blank, you know, have you heard about the rumors and how are you handling them? And a big grin, of course. It's very much a compliment to be linked to any one club, let alone a club at, you know, top tier Germany after the humbling beginnings, I would say. Dave, I think you would agree with that and St. Pauli and coming up. He just mentioned how, you know, it's great to hear these things. It's almost, you know, complimentary, but ultimately you just got to put your head down and work. And if it happens, it happens. If not, then you just carry on. And to me, it was sort of impressive in terms of, you know, hearing that it's basically the perfect PR response, which, you know, they're probably coached in a way too. But ultimately, we'll see what happens. I'm just wanted to share that quick point from that anecdote from listening in. I think it was Jonathan Tannenwald who might have asked him. So just some credit to him for I don't want to say having the guts, but going at him right away with the first question he answers.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, but listen, I'm happy for Leon. I know I myself was very critical of him early on, so it's nice to eat my own words. It's nice to say, Dave, you were right. You turned it around. I'm happy to be wrong about Leon. We all know how great of a guy he is and how much passion he puts in. So perfectly fine with being wrong here. But in terms of the other goals, we had Jacob Glesson scoring a goal for his first one of the season, which was great to see. Also off a corner kick, which I know Todd Lewis had, I believe, mentioned to Jim Curtin as well during the press conference how against Orlando, they didn't really have what you would want out of set pieces. But then against Miami, it was obviously right away the first one in, the first one you get the goal. So, Dave, what were your thoughts on the Glesson's goal or just the other goals that we saw that night, especially from Julian?
Well, I mean, it was just great to actually score from a set piece. And I think, as you alluded to in the Orlando game, I think you missed about like 20 corners in that game and they all just came to us and nothing. I just felt like
first man.
Every time, even the first man, it just felt like a repetitive sort of like thing, just ball going, crossing the box, gets blocked out of play for a corner. It's like, well, here we go again. But I think it was good to see, I think that's Kai Wagner's second assist of the season from a corner down. I think he got the first Damian Lowe in San Jose, I believe. So, it's good to see those sort of come up into fruition. And I think obviously a great delivery and very, very good header from Glesner, be able to sort of, not quite sort of like direct the ball into the far corner at the reach of the goalkeeper, very well taken finish. And sort of a mention on Bendit quite as well. I think quite an interesting thing, perhaps the Union can take a lot of credit for and a lot of confidence for, is that the last two games they haven't really been tested in terms of shots at goal. I know of course Orlando scored twice, but I can't really think of a save Bendit had to make. Like, the first goal was just unfortunate because obviously the ball sort of got caught up with Glesner as he couldn't deal with it, and then the second one, it took a the commentary team made a really, really big point of how it took a deflection on its way to goal, which took it out of the reach of Bendit. And then, as we mentioned just a minute ago, like Bendit, of course, got getting done over by the Glesner's deflection on the goal on Saturday night. So I think, again, like the Union goal hasn't been tested, which is, I think, personally a good sign. I think it shows that,
He had that one where he tipped it over.
I think it was the only the sort of chance I can remember Orlando really having, sort of. Mm-hmm. Apart from that one, of course, I know Inter Miami had that one sort of like cluster and all that. Cluster inside the box where a couple of blocks in front of the goal happened. Yep. But Bendit wasn't really tested. So I think it's a good sign, that players are preventing shots on goal and all these big chances. So defensively, it's a good thing. I sort of understand where Jim perhaps came from with being annoyed with the performance. I mean, again, I thought, especially before the first goal went in, thought Inter Miami sort of settled into the game a lot quicker than Union. I think the goal just completely killed them, which obviously shows the mentality and the mindset of that team at the moment, which is probably, oh, here we go again as soon as they concede. So I know they're going to bring in Busquets and Messi, but there's a lot of work clearly to do, not just with the playing squad, but the overall mentality of that team, because it's clearly one that they're not in the right headspace mentally and they haven't got that winning mindset, which is clearly not, been there since the start.
The franchise in general, I talked to Alex and Winley, about a couple months ago at this point, and how there was clear drama in the locker room between Pizarro and Higuain. So it's not like this franchise has always had this great culture around it. We've had that drama in the locker room with them. Now we have this circus and this unknowing future in their hands. And you're right, Dave. I mean, this team has a lot of work to do. This is not just a two-player fix. You can't just plug in Messi and be a contender tomorrow. There's a lot of work to be done. But Jose, what are your thoughts on what Dave mentioned?
Yeah, I think I completely agree with everything you said, Dave. And what I really wanted to talk about was sort of, we get it. Lionel Messi's coming. It's going to be gigantic for the sport, for the country, everything. I get it. But, my gosh, can MLS and Apple just sort of move on, right? I hate to say move on, but, my gosh, Sasha Kljestan just trying to educate people of, listen, statistically speaking, I just don't see the math working out right. On average, 43 points needed to make it into the playoffs historically. That means that Miami needs to win 9, draw 2, and then barely lose any. So it's just statistically not possible. And, some other commentators within The show were very quick. Wright Phillips decided to just say, "Don't trust the mess, just believe in Messi." You know, like, come on, let's just get it over with, right? And you know, having talked with Alejandro Bedoya after the match as well, he also acknowledged the circus is here. He felt it today, as in Saturday. He felt it during the match. He felt the madness. He could just tell that it was different, both on our end of obviously being supportive fans and being almost 110% capacity, which is awesome, but also just the inner Miami circus with seeing so many kids and adults coming in with Messi jerseys, may it be Argentina or inner Miami FC customs that they already got. It's just really interesting to have witnessed the circus without the ringmaster here. So yeah. I can only imagine what it's going to become next year. Or, gosh, if Sasha's wrong and we do face a Messi and Busquets and whoever else he decides to bring along in the playoffs, I can only imagine what that stadium will be like.
It's gonna be intense. I'll tell you that much.
It's gonna be bananas, Mike. I can't even figure out, like, in my head what, like, 120% capacity. At what point does the fire marshal get involved? Right.
Yeah. Right. We're trying to look into the stadium. We're gonna leave like 3 hours early just to get there. 2 hours ahead of match time. Listen, I mean, and also before the game started, we had a really good time to tailgate. I know, Jose, you don't typically go to the Sons of Ben tailgate, so it was nice to have you, you know, hanging with the people, enjoying the atmosphere. It was a good time. But in terms of the remaining goals, the one goal that we all loved in particular was the Julian Carranza sitter that he put away pretty nicely. I know Ua did well to kind of secure that. Ua almost came away with two assists that night too. If I think it was Ruiz who kind of snuck in on that fourth goal behind Julian to take that second goal from him. But I thought Ua had a good night. In terms of the substitutions, we also had like a handful of subs, but the most important one was the Kai Wagner substitution. So if you guys missed it during the match, it seemed like he got some sort of tweak at some point at the end of the first half. Mm-hmm. Precautionary reasons, Matt Real came in and covered the left. And then after the match, James said basically he's had hamstring issues. It was a slight tweak. They said if it was a playoff game, he probably would have played the entire match, but again, you're up 3-0 at halftime. Why are you risking Kai Wagner, you know, one of your most important pieces out there? So Matt Real comes in. So, Jose, what were your thoughts on Matt Real or any of the substitutions? We saw Nathan Harriel going as center back. We saw Torres come in. What were your thoughts on all the subs?
Bravo to Jim for finally utilizing subs, especially when we get into the humid temperatures and the humidity in Pennsylvania, never mind going to Miami or gosh, Atlanta's indoors, so luckily it's indoors. But to see Alejandro Bedoya again come off, what was it, the 60th minute? I can't remember, but it was before the game really got away. But to see him be thoughtfully rested and not run into the ground like Jim typically would, even at this stage of the season, I think was admirable. And even in the talking to him and hearing some other questions from other press members, you know, the first question was, how's your body holding up? And, you know, he was very happy with the way he's feeling after missing six matches. So he's feeling good. He's feeling healthy. Hopefully that thigh that was obviously a lingering injury from the Eastern Conference Final is officially fixed, alleviated, whatever word you want to use. And we just get the captain of the last couple of years. But, you know, my thought still remains, how do we move on? What is the roster shifting like in the next couple of, you know, months as we obviously hopefully win an MLS Cup? But he's here for the ride, so that's exciting. But the rest of the substitutions were absolutely fine. I don't know about Torres. I think he had a nice little run, Mike, and chose not to pass the ball to the right person, which sort of, like, you know, myself being probably the loudest person in the press box, let out a gigantic sigh. But you know, what can you do? It is what it is to come into a match like that, especially when you're outpossessed 70% to 30 as a fresh sub. So how about you, Dave? What do you think about those substitutions?
I think, again, I was probably most shocked to see Bedoya went off before an hour. I think everyone probably expected him to play the full 90 minutes. Anyone else? It was good to see him out there, but he did seem a couple of yards off the pace of the game. He didn't really seem to get involved whenever he did get the ball. He lost it on perhaps one too many occasions. I think one of the most noticeable ones was when he got on the ball and the touch was way too heavy. And he sort of, with the player character and just had to smash it at Jose Martinez, was like 4 yards away. But yeah, I think obviously it's good to see him back on the pitch, but I think he did struggle to keep up with the pace a bit. And I think even before the injury, that was a bit of a common theme throughout the season, where he did look a bit off the pace or looked a bit too tired after 30 minutes of the game. So again, like the decrease of the workload, I feel like is something that needs to happen for Ali, or at least until he can get fully fixed. Perhaps it is a bit of rust in him. So I've heard alluded to, he was out for 6 or 7 games and a long period of time. And especially at that age as well, it's going to take you a while to sort of heat back up. So fingers crossed, you know, he can sort of be eased into it and Jim Curtin doesn't fall into his usual habits of, you know, plying him for 90 minutes every single game, running him into the ground, even if he is looking knackered and not offering anything in the midfield and seeing him overloaded.
Yeah, the Union made a handful of subs, so they'll just kind of go through them all. One of them was certainly forced by Jose Martinez's hands. We'll get to that in a second.
Oh my God, yeah.
We'll get there in a second. So Nathan Harry replaced Michael Uwa. McGlynn replaced Bedoya. And, of course, McGlynn, especially with the Leon Flock news being what it is, if anybody's somewhat cheering for Leon to go, is McGlynn. I mean, he would then be either a starter full-time or just get more of that minute. So I'm happy to see McGlynn possibly thriving more as he gets older. But we have Torres replacing Gazzag, as I mentioned, Real for Wagner. And then Jesus Bueno came in for Jose Martinez. So now I'm going to talk about the early yellow card from Jose. He goes behind, I don't remember what Miami player was. It was a very almost incidental contact style movement, and he gets a yellow card immediately from a head official. I believe his name is Malik, right? Who just was
Malik,
whatever. Who was not really the best of on that night. But so he gets a yellow card early. Michael Uwa got a yellow card within the first, 20 minutes or so.
Mike, that was his eighth game as a center official. And prior to that, he's been nothing more than an assistant referee for VAR, I believe.
I can tell. So the issue then later on the match was Jose Martinez. So Jose, he gets into a little scuffle. He's just chirping back and forth with the ref. I think it was about the 65th minute or so, and you could tell Jose was just getting under the ref's skin there. And thankfully, Jim immediately took Bueno out. And he was just like, come on, bring him on. I thought Bueno did fine, but I love Martinez. I really do. I love his tenacity. I love Kai Wagner. I really do. But even late, Kai gets like bumps at the keeper a little bit there. It's like, you guys are winning. You're winning 3-0 or 4-1. Just chill the hell out. Like, we just can't afford any more of these, you know, suspensions. Go ahead, Dave.
So I thought Jim perhaps has learned from his mistake in the NAFC game and the CCL, where, you know, after that first half, you know, he had Mbaizo and Ali Bedoya both on yellow cards. So, you know, usually, like, say if your fullback's got an early yellow card, you usually say, okay, like, the player in front of him, cover him. Couldn't do that because Ali was also on the yellow card and was probably more like, you know, no disrespect, when you've got Boanga on that side and, you know, very tricky winger, Ali's probably not going to be able to deal with him. And it's sort of, I think that was probably the main thing I tweeted about that night was, you know, that literally was, it was a death sentence. It was something waiting to happen if he didn't bring either one of them off. And of course, we paid the ultimate price and saw Olivier get recarded for a second yellow card, which, yeah, I know people will sit there and say, well, yeah, he should have been more careful, but look, it's going to happen as a fullback when you're going up one-on-one against one of the best players in the MLS. And, of course, he got punished for it. And I think Jim, of course, to his credit, the last couple of games, I think it happened with Leon in Orlando, where he had obviously had an early yellow card and the fouls were ticking up. And I think it got to a point where the referee was like, you've maybe got one more before I give you a second yellow. And Jim was quick to bring Leon off and he did the exact same for Jose, which is good to see. Perhaps he's being more proactive with his subs as opposed to reactive.
It was like a shepherd's hook on Martinez, yeah, just like dragging him out as fast as possible. It was actually comical. I was sitting there thinking to myself, this is like out of Looney Tunes, just how quick of a substitution this is.
Yeah. It was fast. And we all said, like, get him out. Okay, Jim, yeah, listen to us.
But sort of like, it's good to see Jim being more proactive as opposed to reactive, sort of like, you know, waiting for something to happen. Again, like the Mbaizo red card, just sort of waited for him to make that change, or he waited for it to happen. It's sort of where I think a lot of people could see what was going to happen. And it did happen from a mile off. And it was sort of annoying that Jim couldn't see sort of when at the start of the second half, thinking, okay, perhaps I should make a change. Yeah. So it was good to see him, you know, him being more proactive.
I mean, you think about just, I was talking. I forget who I was talking to in the box. I think he's probably talking to. I was talking to JD, one of the other guys there, and he. I was saying, when's the last time we've seen this many subs before the 70th minute? I mean, I can't. I maybe. You know what? The one match I could think of was the Play the Kids match in New England, right before one of our CCL matches.
God,
we had that full turnover in the second half. We ended up playing worse. I think that was Paxton Aronson's. No, it wasn't Paxton. Never mind.
But, I know the game. Yeah.
Was it Paxton Aronson's first goal? Wasn't it against he like tricked up?
I think it was the game.
Who's the Revolution defender? The taller one. I can't remember his name right now.
I'm not sure who it was, but
Andrew Farrell. That's one
of them. Yes.
So I remember the game.
Yeah, Paxton tricks up Farrell. He gets a goal. We were playing decent in the first half, and then we do like five substitutions, and just come out. And remember, Dave, you mentioned like they looked worse with the substitutions on.
That was a weird one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a game where they played the they pretty much played all the kits, and they brought like Shabirko, Bedoya, and everything on at halftime, and then just the game plan went to absolute crap. And I was like, well, okay,
it's not
ideal at all.
That was the last time I could think of when they made that many subs before a certain minute mark. But even when you mentioned the formation and like the and all that stuff, Jim was pretty honest with us in the press conference. He said we almost thought about switching the formation at halftime because he really was just not pleased with it. They ended up going with three in the back with Nathan Harrell in the center back later. But even that, you know, you don't see Jim making that much change with the formation. He just said, okay, this is what we're going with. We're going to force it, and that's what's going to happen no matter what. Against San Jose, you saw the same thing. Damian Lowe gets hurt. Now, maybe it wasn't the change of formation that we wanted, but it was still an adjustment that he made that we didn't typically see from Jim from before. So whether you like all the adjustments or not, that's besides the point. It's good to see Jim at least trying to be proactive, to your point, Dave. Go ahead, Jose. Yeah.
It's just very hard to believe. And it almost feels like a completely different world, almost like, you know, before 2020 and then after 2020, how we experience things now. But it's hard to believe that, and Mike, you alluded to this a couple of weeks ago, even before this match, maybe we were looking further ahead at the time, but we are one of their five wins. That is, yeah, that's crazy, right? Like, it's hard to believe that this team is the one that scored two worldies to beat us at their place. Right, the one was the one crazy volley off of the chest that I think it was Duke, who's no longer there anymore. I think he transferred out to Toronto. I can't remember.
Just lost Bob Bradley.
Yeah, they just lost Bob. But no, to me, it's just kind of amazing that, you know, like, talk about a season just going the wheels falling off. Right after that, I think you had mentioned, Mike, at some point about just like, you know, after us, they haven't won anything. It's been nothing but ties and losses. And sure, they're missing some key pieces with the Andre Yetlin being one of the key ones. And then also, I can't remember the name of the player, but Jim holds his stock pretty high. Somebody who's injured, I want to say something Miller, but I can't recall who it is. But it's just, again, it's just really interesting to see how their season really flipped upside down. And if, you know, we want to check into how fandom is out in Inter Miami, the Battered Herons and Inter Miami podcast, and Inter Miami podcast, very quick to already say, not even Messi can save us this year. So it's they're at that stage of grief right now. I don't know what step that is out of the five, but they're, I think, hopefully brighter days ahead for them, because I think that it'll be an interesting next couple of years with the probably best player to ever play the game being on their squad.
At this point, they can only go up from here, really. You would hope, at least. Yeah. But I mean, I guess in terms of going up, we did climb the table a bit. So on that night, not only was the win important, we did have some movement in the Eastern Conference. I believe you said, I know Cincinnati lost, right, Jose?
Cincinnati lost 3-0 to DC United.
That's a bad loss. And
well, you got to remember, they don't have Vasquez, and they also don't have Matt Miazga.
That's right. And then you had Nashville, I believe, who lost as well. So we had a couple, we had some movement there. Now we're only about a point or so back from second place. But Dave or Jose, one of you had to remind me, which one of you posted that message on our channel about the Cincinnati schedule ahead?
I think it was Jose.
Jose, okay. So we have a tough couple matches ahead of us in terms of travel and being on the road. We have Atlanta, we have LA Galaxy, and then we have Nashville. So, Jose, can you compare our schedule to Cincinnati's, please?
So Cincinnati has New England. So they're, what, number two on the Eastern Conference, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Then they play against Charlotte. tough game, regardless of where playing, if they're playing at home or away, I can't tell based on honestly just my message, so I apologize. Then they go ahead, tight turnaround. So Saturday match, then they have a Wednesday match against New York Red Bulls, and then 3 days later they play against Nashville. So that is a very tight turnaround for them. Five games, and again, I keep on mentioning it, but come July 21st, 22nd, then we have that break. But continue to keep an eye out on that September 16 match that we will be hosting Cincinnati. It really could come down to that match being a key indicator onto who gets that supporter shield. And let's not forget that really there are two ways, Mike, that we can qualify for the CONCACAF Cup next year, which is supporter shield and or winning the league. So I don't know which one's more likely. I'm thinking probably winning the league versus catching up to Cincinnati, since, you know, technically it's a tournament at the end of it all. But just an interesting stretch ahead for the pack leaders right now.
Yeah, so just to add some clarity to Jose's point, they are hosting New England. Then they go on the road for back-to-back matches. They go to Charlotte, and then they go to the Red Bulls. And then they
Charlotte's host. Tough.
And then they host Nashville. Yeah, you know, listen, I know Charlotte. I know we took care of Charlotte at home, but it was a 1-0 game. We had mentioned that Charlotte had been playing better of late at that point. So I don't see that being a cakewalk either, especially if they're still missing some pieces with the Gold Cup going on. Speaking of Gold Cup, we forgot to mention Damian Lowe scored a header as well against the U.S. national team, so that's a good thing for us. And then, of course, hosting Nashville is going to be a problem. But, Dave, I know we had talked about last week the points. Where's Jim Curtin look at the points? We're happy with the 4 points now. But now up ahead we have Atlanta. Again, we have LA Galaxy, and we go to Nashville. What's your ideal situation here in terms of points?
Be honest, I think probably the 4 to 5 point range. I think, again, sort of as Jim, I mean, it's very rare you really go three games on the road in the MLS. And looking, I think the two big games are going to be the Atlanta and Nashville game. Of course, LA Galaxy is going to be a tough one. But, you know, looking at their recent form, looking at the league table, I think the second bottom of the Western Conference, they're struggling to pick up wins at the moment. I think they've won one of the last five games. So yeah, it's gonna be a difficult 3-game stretch, especially as you sort of mentioned, heading into that sort of League's Cup break in a few weeks as well. I think the last game Union had before that is NYCFC. So I think, you know, if they can come out of this stretch with a win and a draw, perhaps before the NYCFC game, it would probably, you know, look more favourable. We'd look back on it more favourably as opposed to, you know, if they go out there get 1 point or something. But it's going to be three really tough games, I think, as we sort of always mentioned, you know, going out, playing out West Coast is always difficult, especially this time of year with the heat and humidity. You know, Atlanta's going to be no pushover. They've had a strong season. And as the commentary team alluded to heavily on the game at the weekend, you know, Thiago Almada's going to be a very, very tough player to, you know, play up against. And that's why it was so important that Jose Martinez didn't get sent off in the game. And then, just as well, Nashville, again, they're having a really good season and, you know, having moved over to the Western Conference last year and not done too badly there either. They've now obviously come back here this year and they're pushing at the top again. So I think it'll be a tough test, both games. And I don't think the Union have the best record in Nashville either. I think was it last season or the year before, that really boring 1-0 defeat they had, where I think...
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. Sepong scored within the first, like, 5 minutes.
Like I think it was, like, the first, like, 30 seconds. I think I literally missed a goal because I turned it on, and as soon as I turned it on, the goal had gone in. I was like, crikey, here we go. I think, again, that's a game. It's a team where the Union, I wouldn't say notoriously have struggled against, but they're a team that perhaps the Union find difficult to come up against, especially on the road. I don't think they played Nashville on the road last year, but that 1-0 game really sticks out in my mind as to how that last year was. Fingers crossed, you know, the Union are a much better team than they were 2 years ago. But
last year was the first goal for UA for us, and it was the first goal at Giuda Stadium, wasn't it? Was it not?
Yep.
Right before we went to LAFC. So just looking at the numbers here quick between Atlanta and Philly, and that's obviously the first match we have ahead of us. It's on Sunday at 4 p.m. I know, Dave, you're covering that at a game where you're not staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning. No. That's nice for you. So we have The Union for Atlanta can certainly score. They have 37 goals on the season. We have 34 goals against, though. They give up a bunch. They've given up 35 goals this year compared to our 20. So a pretty large difference in terms of goal differential here. But, I mean, listen, Jose, what do you think with Atlanta? I mean, always traveling to that stadium, we know they have a good fan base. We know the atmosphere is going to be tough. Yes, they don't have, you know, Jose Martinez anymore, which was always our biggest concern. But your thoughts going to Atlanta?
The surface. It's going to be very different, obviously, being turf and the way that the ball bounces, the way the ball runs. So that's going to be an adjustment that needs to be made. I don't know if Jim ever considers going to YSC or going to a turf location to practice a little bit prior to the match. Obviously, players in the MLSPA is probably not very thrilled about some of these surfaces that the teams are still playing on. But I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on, especially as our players probably get used to the ball rolling a little bit faster and bouncing a little bit higher off of every possible touch. But gosh, it's a shame that we don't play Atlanta a little bit further into the season, because I can't imagine a world where Thiago Almada finishes the season in Atlanta, especially after the being the first MLS player to be part of a World Cup winning roster. I can't imagine that he has too much time left with that squad, unless he's already sold. I don't think he's sold, right? He's still on the team.
Yeah, he's there, because I made the point about it the weekend that on Saturday night that, you know, Jose Martinez would be battling against.
Gotcha. So it's a shame that he's still there. It'll be fun to see. And frankly, I'm not too afraid, considering the way that our backline has been pocketing some of these players in terms of Josef Martinez and then again Rodolfo Pizarro this past weekend. So it'll be tough. And I don't know, you know, we talk about these stretches with Atlanta, LA, Nashville, and New York. We're looking at a potential 12 points. I think an Atlanta tie, LA win, that's 4. Nashville tie, that's 5. And then a New York City win, I'd be happy with 8 points out of the possible points available. Val, so nice point.
Valerie's comment says, speaking of balls bouncing, how many times can Glessness make the ball hit the crossbar at Atlanta this time? That was still, in my opinion, top 5 most impressive goals for the Union. It was just, you don't see that too often, that kind of power that goes into it. So you go ahead. So you're saying 8 points out of that stretch there, Jose. That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm thinking. Obviously, pie in the sky. God, I would love to win against Nashville away, as well as Atlanta. But, you know, tie away from home is really the goal. But we got to sneak away with a win here and there.
Yeah, I mean, think three road games in a row. We always say, as you say, right, the tie on the road.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, if you want to stick with that mentality, you're looking at 6 points out of those next 4 games.
I know. I'm being ambitious.
That's really that LA Galaxy game is the one where if you do get 8 points, that's where you're going to get the 8 point right there.
Well, so, that team's in shambles, right? They're going through so many changes, having just kicked out Klein and also Chicharito being out for the season. So that team is just in a very tough spot that I can't imagine that they're obviously, are they bottom feeders of the Western Conference this year, or pretty close to it now?
Second last.
Yeah, they're second last. So, Colorado's worse than them.
Rosenberry. I miss you, Rosenberry. He probably misses us more than anything. It'd be nice to sneak out of LA, especially with that travel and the miles that we're about to put on with a win. But again, can't be too upset with a tie, especially when you're putting this many away games in a row.
Agreed. So, I mean, well, any last thoughts, Dave? Sorry, before we kind of close out on the predictions here.
That's correct. So, I mean, looking at the sort of the recent fixtures, the Union are unbeaten in the last 8 games against Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah. Last defeat was in July 2018 at Subaru Park. And obviously the last time they lost in Atlanta was in June 2018. Look at the players. I think Josef Martinez scored a hat-trick and Fafa Picol scored the only goal for the Union. But yeah, I mean, looking at that, I mean, the road results have all been draws in the MLS play. I think the only time the Union have actually won in Atlanta was that famous night in the CCL where Andre Blake, I don't know what he had that day, but I mean, pulled off
he had his Wheaties that night.
Yeah. He had arguably one of the most incredible games I think I've ever seen from a goalkeeper in that first half, keeping the Union in it. And long live Kasper Schaberko and that CC Aaron scored two goals and Anthony Fontana. So, I mean, again, just looking at that, completely different team in terms of the attacking options in comparison to now. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a tough game. You know, obviously, that game and beating Ryan against Atlanta is obviously nice to see, but I think at some point it's going to end. Fingers crossed it doesn't end this weekend. But as I said, if you can get 5 points from the next three games, and or 4 or 5 points out of the next three games and beat NYCFC, you're feeling good.
Feeling good. I agree. So let's see. We don't typically do predictions for midweek games because of the unpredictability, but we do have some more idea what's going to happen on Sunday. So we'll do Sunday predictions here, and then we'll wrap up the show. I know we always try not to run too late, but yeah, here we are again. So I guess I'll go first this time around. So Atlanta versus Union. Unfortunately, Dave, that 8-game streak kind of freaks me out. As like a betting man, you're thinking, oh well, eventually yes, that streak's going to end. It feels like this could be it, especially with Bendik still in net. If Blake was in net, I would say no problem. With how much this team scores, Atlanta, I worry that they just bury one past them, and it's just too quick on the turf, and he can't pick it up or something like that. It's more so the turf, I think, mixed with Atlanta being a high-scoring team that kind of freaks me out. So I'm going to go with a 2-1 loss at Atlanta. I don't think we pull out with a draw. I don't do it. But listen, prove me wrong, Uni. If you're watching, Curtin, prove me wrong. So I'm going to go 2-1. Atlanta pulls off with a win here. I'll say that Julian puts one in the back of the net. Jose, I'll shoot to you.
I think it's going to be a 2-1 win. One Ua, one Carranza, and then Thiago Almada will probably put something in. Some way, shape, or form, he'll be probably putting a free kick in from 50 yards out, and Joel, you know, Bendik and net, probably an easy target to pick on. But yeah, 2-1. I think this is one of those rare away wins that we'll be able to sneak out, and again continue to solidify the strength of this team, especially away from home in a hostile environment.
Well, considering Atlanta's in the playoff picture, that'd be a great win on the road.
It would be gigantic.
It would be a great win. Almost as good as the Nashville game if we were to win that one. But Dave, go ahead, your predictions.
I think, of course, Atlanta probably maybe a bit more dangerous than they would be having come off, you know, being battered in New York, losing 4-0 to the Red Bulls. But I'm going to say 1-1 draw. I think I'm going to sit in between the both of you. Goal scorer. That's a tough one. We haven't seen Jack Elliott score for a while. I think, you know, perhaps from a set piece from a corner, you know, or, you know, for some reason, if he takes another free kick, which is one of the things that has baffled me. That's one thing perhaps I haven't discussed about throughout the season, but the Union have somewhat gotten out of the habit of it. Was one of the earlier part of the period, especially when, for some reason, both centre-backs took all the free kicks, like from shooting opportunities, and it just baffled me why, when you have like Kai Wagner and Jack McGill on the pitch. But I could see, I'd like to think that Jack Elliott will, yeah, get on the score sheet.
I like that. I like the optimism, because you know how much I love Jack, my boy Jack. Yeah. So if you look at the last few games from Atlanta, they had the 2-2 draw against NYCFC, tough match there. Then you beat DC United 3-1. They drew to LAFC prior to that. That's a pretty good draw right there on the road. But I just lost my train of thought. But what I was going to say, I agree with what you said.
No, I think what you meant to say, Mike, that's a tough stretch. I mean, obviously, that DC game must have been the gotcha game for them, but they were able to obviously surpass it. But LAFC tying, that's pretty good. Never mind tying against New York, who are, you know, another sketchy team to go up against.
Yeah,
absolutely. So we'll wrap up the show here. I'm sure what I was going to say just will come back as I meet the sponsors here, because I just completely drew blank. But this, listen, it's Monday. It's one of those days. My work phone's been blowing off the last 10 minutes. It's just welcome to Monday. Welcome to my life. Here we go. Let's go with the sponsors here. Check out Statement Games at statementgames.com for a funny way to fantasy sports entertainment. You win gift cards and prizes. Free to sign up at statementgames.com. You have Doner Distillery at the Trolley Barn Public Market in Quakertown. Go to donerdistillery.com to check out their wide variety of drinks and spirits. Then you have Vinny's Pizza and Restaurant in Allentown, PA. Discover a new favorite by trying their top pizzas and so much more. Check out the new website at vinny'spizzarestaurant.com. I didn't even put it on the screen. There you are, right there. My apologies. Next, we have Stuff the Grills at 6750 Iroquois Trail number 5 in Allentown. They have homemade hot and cold sandwiches, salads, appetizers, baked goods, and so much more. or you can order online at stufftothegrills.com. Again, available for any event. Then we have the Across the Pitch gear and all AAT Sports Network gear at aatsportsnetwork.com/shop. And Margo, we still haven't texted her, Jose. Shame on us. We have to go back. MargoReedStudio.com or MargoReedStudio on IG. And we'll get to the commercial in a moment once I take these sponsors off. But again, final thoughts, Dave, here for you.
I mean, of course, it's the start of a very, very tough stretch for the Union now. Obviously, three road games in a row. Obviously, a start of a stretch, which of course had four road games in five games. And, you know, they got a good point in Orlando, who are also competing in the playoff places, hoping to, you know, try and close the gap on, well, trying to open up a gap between Montreal. You know, it's going to be another tough task on Sunday night, or Sunday evening, well, Sunday afternoon for you guys, Sunday night for me, against Atlanta, you know, who have, you know, have had a solid season. I think 29 points out of 20 games, you know, and comfortably in sixth place at the moment. They've got a 3-point gap over Montreal, favourable goal difference and everything. So it's going to be a tough start to a stretch. And of course, I think if the Union can go into the Nashville game with perhaps even if they have 4 points somehow, I think we'll all probably be feeling a lot better going into that game, especially with how tough of a team they are and how good they have been at home this season.
Yeah, Fafa Boko coming back to haunt us that game, I'm sure. Yeah. Jose, your final thought?
Just keep an eye out on our socials, as one of us will probably be covering the pre-match press conference. But outside of the Union, just hard to believe I'm about to have a one-year-old in just 2 days. I still remember it was actually game day, the day he was born, June 28th last year. So I still remember sitting in the hospital room staring at a very, very small TV that was muted to not wake up the little guy who had just finally gone to nap. So it's hard to believe how fast the year has come. But I think, Mike, I speak for both of us, and obviously I'll have your thoughts as well. But I think it was really refreshing, and I think really re-energizing. We spend a lot of time during this preparing press conferences pre and post, Dave, with your time change, etc. But to meet a lot of the people that we often interact with or interact with us during the show was really, really awesome. So again, thank you to everybody who tunes in live or after, follows us on Twitter, reads our post-match, you know, thoughts and press conference thoughts, coverage. It was awesome. So I just want to say thank you to everybody.
Yeah, we really saw like everybody. We made our rounds pretty well. Even just going up through the stadiums, we went to see my neighbor down there, right? We made our rounds. We had a good time, Jose. So my final thought, and I remember what I was going to say, it's funny how a lot of the best goals in Union history were scored by defenders or defensive style players.
You're still on this. Oh my God.
No, I just thought of it now because Mark McKenzie's goal against CC, you had the Gillespie's goals, you had the Ruiz goals, even Jose Martinez, right, being a defensive minded player. It's just great. It's great to see a bunch of
defenders.
Because
you don't expect it.
I know, but they're so good too when they have it. Besides the point, anyway, I remember what I wanted to say. I had to say it. So that is Across the Pitch. Happy Monday night, guys. I believe the game's on Sunday, so you'll probably see a press conference on Friday, if not Thursday, I believe, right, Jose?
Yeah. Friday, I believe, because then they immediately flight for time zone acclimation.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, great. So Friday, I assume we'll have a press conference out. I've been trying to put out a video on TikTok, and I just haven't had the freaking time, to be perfectly honest with you. Mm-hmm. So more things to come. If you did check out my TikTok recently, you saw Jose's interview, quick soundbite with Alejandro Bedoya. So please check that out regarding the 2025 Club World Cup. And we'll end with this commercial. And listen, guys, have a great evening. Go Union.
Duke.
Support for AAT Sports Network is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's performance package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. With this offer, you'll join over 8 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Enjoy 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code AATSports. That is AATSports at manscaped.com. As a married man, I have been there. Personal grooming can be difficult and pretty painful. Luckily, the performance package 4.0 has arrived. And oh man, it is a game changer. Inside this package, you'll find their lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the crop preserver ball deodorant, the crop reviver toner, a pair of performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold all of your new tools. First off, the lawnmower 4.0. This thing is the future of grooming. Because this trimmer's waterproof, you can say goodbye to the mess. You thought that was good, but want to take your grooming game even further to the next level? The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer. The Weed Whacker is also waterproof and provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate nose holes. Their Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner will change the way you approach your hygiene routine. Trust me when I say this, fellas. Your balls will be thankful. To top it all off, Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. So remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code AATSPORTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com and use code AATSPORTS to support us. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.